session number 20942, Reel 3.
Andy Brown, Reel 3. You were just telling me about how few people didn't get wounded.
There was only three of us what didn't get wounded. All the rest got wounded and come back out to us. Some of them had served in Africa, and some of them got three wound stripes up. They'd already been wounded three times. You know, from joining the commando, like, you know.
What was it like on the River Maas?
It was cold, and we patrolled it. And one little instance was, we had a house this side where we used to go into, and warm up and make a bit of food up. And old Jerry could see us, and he had his house over the other side, where he was doing exactly the same as us. Well, at night time we'd come down to the river, and where we had some trenches, and do our on our off there. And I remember one particular time we had this new officer come out to us. His name was Hoomspry, and he came out to see us that morning. As we come back, we're going back to the billet, and he said, "Oh, look, there's some Jerry's there." He said, "Have a pot at them." So I said, "No." I said, "What'll happen?" I said, "They'll mortar us." And we said, "We'll mortar their billet." I said, "Yes, and they'll mortar us, and we won't have our billet. Leave it alone." And thus we more or less had a truce, you know, that they left our billets alone, and we left theirs alone. Well, we was in there for about a week or something like that, and the Yanks further up the river, a good way away, were having trouble getting prisoners. So they sent for us, and two troop had to go up. About three big old Yankee wagons come down with the coloured drivers, who we got on with very well, and give us bars of chocolate and fags and whatever have you. They seem to have plenty. And took us up to where they were billeted. And that was along the side of the Mars. And they had blinking great khaki tents there and mess halls and all under canvas, and they're having a whale of a time. And but they tried to get a prisoner and couldn't get him, because they were brave enough, but the only reason was they didn't know the right way to go about it. They went over yelping, whooping and yelping, and old Jerry knew where they were and just knocked them out. Anyway, that was decided that we go and get two prisoners for them. And this officer, Hoomspry, was going to lead the patrol. And we went across the river in rubber boots. And that was flowing pretty hard. So we went into the current like that and took it over the other side where we wanted. And we always left one man with each boot to protect the boat and start to go forward to see if we could get a prisoner. Well, we see one or two dead Yanks lying about there, which we didn't take a lot of notice of, and start to go forward and couldn't make contact, and we're having a bit of a job. And this Hoomspry, he said, "Well, we'll go into wall if necessary, if we have to take a prisoner." That was quite a little place, you know. Quite a big place, like, you know. So I and Slim Somerville, who was a sniper, who was then had a Tommy gun on that particular job, said, "Well, why don't we go and have a look around some farmyards?" So anyway, we were lucky because the first farmyard we went into, we went round the corner, and there sat two Jerrys in a hole. Well, Rosenthorn, a mate of mine, being a Jew, could speak seven languages. So he just told him, he said, "We're in a special detachment of the German SS, and you know, you've been caught asleep, come out the hole with your hands up," which they did do. So we had two prisoners. So we thought, "We're lucky boys, we'll get out of this." But the Zoom Spry said, "No, we'll have a look in the farm. We'll have a look in the farm." I said, "Well, we all agreed that we wanted to get out of it." So, but he wanted to have a look in the farm, so we went across the farm, and that was moonlight, artificial moonlight. And with that, the stable door opened, and there was a German NCO, same as plain as daylight, stood there, and Rosie shouted out "Hands a Hawk" to him in German, and he got to bring his hands up with the revolver in his automatic revolver in his hands. When Slim Somerville, the old sniper who then had a Thompson Tommy gun, let go at him and knocked him into the farm, and then we ran for it. And we ran, what I forgot to say was, when we left the boats, we left three men further in, and then we left five men. And then it was only about six, four of us went forward, you see, to get this prisoner. The idea being, once you'd got them, you'd come back to the first pickup and pick them up, and then you'd come back to the second one and pick them up, and then you'd get back to the boats. But when we got back to the second one, Hoomsbury said to me, "Whoa, hold you, I'd stop you there and let us get back with these prisoners." I said, "No, sir." I said, we don't do that." I said, "We all go back together now." And he said, "I'm giving you an order." I thought to myself, "Well, bugger you and your orders, you know." As I say, he was a new officer out to us. So off they clambered, and soon as they'd gone, I clambered off behind them, getting to the boats, finding they were just pulling off. So we just got into the boats, and I happened to get in with the one where the two Jerrys were in. And next thing you know, Jerry'd outflanked us on both sides. They started a machine gun down the river, and them being rubber boots, so some of them were inexperienced, they started to duck the heads. I said, "Paddle, you buggers, you know." And when I looked, the only two were paddling with a couple of Jerrys. they were paddling. And
what do you mean they ducked their heads in?
Ducked the heads down, you know. But the fire was coming over the heads, so they ducked the heads down. You know, it was no good, you know. That was going over the heads anyway. And we, as I say, we eventually get back. And this Hoomsbury put me on a charge. I had to go and see this Captain Cruden. So I told him exactly what happened, and he couldn't sort of call his officer in front of me, but he must have given him a rubbing down, and we never did like each other after, and he happened to become my troop officer.
Were you still in two troop?
I was still in two, but I was in two troop all the while. And then came the Rhine crossing. And we were waiting some time to cross that. And on the night of crossing, the old RSM come up, Woody Woodcock, and give us a good old drink of rum. I had my fair share, but I'd seen blokes drowned before, you know, with these big alpine packs on. And so there was a little reinforcement kiddie we had who comes from Norwich now. I'm still trying to trace him. I found him once, but then I lost contact with him. And so they brought the May West round to put on for the crossing. And I opened all my equipment up and I had two May Wests. I put two May Wests on. I said to him, come me on. He was only 18, a little baby face he was. Come on. I said, open all that equipment up and put it on him. And, of course, the rest of the boys were laughing. I said, that's all right, you can laugh, you know. Anyway, I said to Holmes, bro, you want a couple of May Wests on? He said, no, I don't. I'm a strong swimmer. I said, yeah, and so am I. But I'd got the equipment over the May Wests that opened out over the May West, so the May West were in, and we had a airborne jumping jackets on there, the button there, you see. I said to Wardy, now, before you get to the river, undo that button. When you get in the boat, undo the button.
On your shoulder?
On your shoulder. Then all you got to do is put your undo the belt, put a hand in the equipment, and the lot will drop off. Anyway, we got into the boats and we started to go across. Next thing you know, I was taking water down by my feet. So I immediately undone my belt and dropped the lot off. Then into the water I went. Well, I swam around for some time and I came across a mate of mine, Jack Sanderson, and came across Jack Sanderson, and he just had his mouth above the water, and the alpine pack was full up, and he was having a terrific struggle to keep up, and I tried to undo his lapels and couldn't undo them, and he started to go under with the weight of the alpine pack filling up, and take me with him, and I had to did the necessary to get away. Nearly drowned him. He took me down about 12 foot. I nearly drowned myself when I come up. And I was swimming around shouting out help, and there was a bloke on the shore following me down. I tried to swim in. You know, I tried to swim in upwards, and that brought me out the current. I tried to swim downwards, and that brought me out. So I had to I was static in the middle, because it's got a good current to the old Rhine at that place. And the next thing I know is these Marines came up and grabbed hold of me and bloody nigh drowned me. And when they pulled me into the boat, who should be sitting in there but this little kiddie Ward who I'd put the two May Wests on. So I said to these Marines, they picked any more up? They said no. We were then making the last trip and we were off. That meant if they hadn't spotted me, I'd have probably drowned, you know. Or probably got washed down river and into Jerry Ann's, you know. And
did your comrade drown? Mr. Sanderson?
Yeah. He's buried in the rice bowl. There was 17 of the section were drowned, and they're all buried in the Rice Hall Cemetery. I go over there regular to see them. I've got photos of all the graves. I go over there regular to see them. And, but they're all buried in that, as you go in the gate of the Rice Hall Cemetery, they're all buried down the bottom on the left-hand side, except their officer, who's buried with some Tilbury blokes, and Jack Sanderson's buried with some Black Watch. He's buried with some Black Watch, but all the rest are buried down the bottom on their own. And when they pulled us out, we took us back to headquarters and rigged us out. They give us a tent, and we went me in this little wardy, and they give us a tent, and then they give me a Bren gun, what was all greased up, and give him a rifle, and they give us some clothes. And by that time, the REs had put the bridges across the Rhine, so the headquarter troop sent out a jeep and sent us out to join the troop. And as I say, that's when I found out how many actually got drowned on that particular crossing of two troops, 17 of us, 17 of them. And then we went to I don't know which one come first, the Alb or the Aller. We went to the River Aller, and it seemed though every time the British Army come up across the river, they sent for the commando. So up we had to go, and they come up and picked us up in trucks, and up we had to go, there, we made a river crossing at night. We went up across the river and come round the back of them and had a good go at them. And two or three other troops went in different directions to get the railway bridge which was across there. And then we had a job removing these jerrys, so they decided that the commando would line up, we'd have a bit of a bayonet charge. Well, I was carrying a Durant rifle at the time. Anyway, we all got in the line in position to charge the enemy. And when they give the order to fix bayonets, mine had a little bit of a problem going on. That seems like it did, you know. You know, a bit of a shake on. Anyway, on that went, and away we went. And we went through them like a dose of salts. We left 300 of them dead about there. And then after the charge, we had to ferry our own dead and wounded across the river, and had to leave the poor old Jerry to the last, and they didn't like the idea of that. They wanted to get out of it.
They wanted what?
They wanted to get out of it. They wanted to get back over the river where our side, with the safe side. They wanted to be with us, you know. They broke and ran, you know, when we charged them, they broke and ran.
Did you stick the bayonet in anybody?
No.
Why not?
I fired one or two shots at them. I never got that close. They ran.
Were they in trenches?
Yeah, there was a lot. As soon as we charged them, they got out the trenches and ran. There was a lot of them got bayoneted. That was known as one of the, what do you call it, you know, I forget what it is. Then the next one, come the River Alb. We went across there in buffaloes, and there was an island in the middle on it, and when we got in the middle on it and got over the other side, there was a big cliff like, and next thing you know, we come under heavy fire, and grenades dropping all around us. And when we looked up, the old Jerry was on top of the cliff, dropping the stick grenades down on us. So we quickly wiped them clear and took this dual purpose gun. That's what his name was. It was a dual purpose gun that was firing down at us. Then Big Billy Eager stood next to me, and he got swung round and chucked onto the ground. And what it was, one of these shells, they're a fair, about 6-inch shell on them, had gone right through his alpine pack and whizzed him around, but didn't hurt him at all. And so we got that. So anyway, when we finished taking that area, there was some dogfights going on with some planes, Jerry planes and ours. So I thought, well, we'll have a little pop at them. These magazines hold 6 of these rounds. So I got on the gun and they pushed me around. I'm elevating it myself and having a pop at them when I come over the water, stop firing at the own bloody planes. We were firing at our own planes. And the Jerry. They were mixed up, you see. We were firing at our own planes as well as the Jerry's.
What kind of gun was this?
That was a dual purpose gun, that's all I know. A German dual purpose gun. You sort of, you pushed a man round on it and he elevated it and fired it, you know. Anyway, after that we went up, I don't know, I think I come in between the River Weser. We were, got over that and was going along, and there was another troop in front of us, when all of a sudden a bloke said, "All is kaput," and I looked into the hedgerow and there was a jerry there. So he said, "I want to give myself up, he'd speak good English." So the old officer got told, and so we give him a stretcher to carry, I think, and keep his hands full. He was quite prepared to come along with us. He'd been a prisoner of war in World War I. And he said, "I let the first lot pass me," he said, "so I shouldn't get knocked off. I knew if I could get took by you lot, I'd be all right." Which he was. And we kept him with us for about 2 days because we had nowhere to pass him back. And our old officer gave him a note to take back to the rear restaurant to tell the blokes there in these camps, you know, to treat him with respect, as he'd give us a lot of good information. He'd give us a lot of information about the area, you know.
Why had he let the first lot go through without...
Well, so we shouldn't get... As soon as they saw him, they'd have popped him off, wouldn't they? The reaction is woof, you know.
Because they were in the front line.
Yeah. We had a troop in front on us, you see, and they let that troop go past and picked on us at the rear because he knew he was the only one. And getting on to then, we got up to the Baltic, and we went into a place called Neustadt. A place near Neustadt called Allegerhaven, which was a village. And we went into digs there, and we went in the whole farmyard and put ourselves into the farm buildings. And the war then finished. And so when we went into Allegerhaven, I got sent out on a patrol down to the shoreline. And there were six of us. And when we started to walk along, we came across an old jerry sailor. And then we came across one or two people in pajama sort of suits what were drowned on the water's edge. So in the bay was two ships upside down, one upright and smoking a bit, and a submarine. So, and then there was about six or seven or eight barges. And so that was like you would be a seaside here with the bungalows down by the shore like. So Rosenthal was with me, and Alec Gooley, both could speak German.
Alec who?
Gooley. Could both speak German. So when we went up to these barges to have a look in, they were full of dead bodies, women, children, old men, all stripped off, all the hair off of them, and all piled up just like a load of bag of bones. And this upset us quite a bit. And so we went to this first beach hut and found some German women there and asked them if they knew anything about it. They said no, they didn't know nothing about it. Didn't know nothing about it. So we got a boat and we rowed out to the submarine, and I went out and got my knife off and went down swinging my knife in case that had been booby trap. Took a look down the submarine, didn't like the idea of being down there. I said, come on, let's go, we're going to have a look on the boat. So we went to the boat and had a rope up the side on it, so we went up the side of it, and the deck was still hot, and we found out afterwards that that was our Air Force what had bombed them, and there was a German dog there that was slap happy, so we shot that, and in the wheelhouse was the Lithuanian or something like that. There was one old boy, and he was pointing to his mouth, you know, and I thought he wanted something, so I gave him a bit of chocolate, and then I had to walk out because what he wanted was a drink. He gave him a drink out of a water bottle, and then we had to get him off the boat. We had to lower him off, got a rope, and I had to lower him off into the boat and brought him back, and they took him in Neustadt Hospital, and I think he survived all right, but he was the only one on that boat that survived.
Were the people in the barges dead?
Well, they weren't alive, were they? They were dead. They were a pile of bones. Now, you know, like you got at Boston and that, well, a pile of bones. I forgot to mention this piece about after we got over the Ella, a German officer come into our lines and wanted to give the ground up. He said going to a camp where there'd been a lot of disease and that, and we said that if he'd give the ground up to the camp, which was 20 mile away, he would we would get someone to go down there. We took him in to see our headquarters, and they let him go, and he come back again and said yes, they've given the ground. And the 13th and 18th as ours, and the 5th and 4th of regiment went down this forest road. They got fired at going down because some of the Jerry's hadn't been told, and that's how they freed Belson off. But we got told we were going to go down Belson, but then that was decided against it because half of the commander were Jews or were foreigners, like, you know. We had our French troop, four commander had the French troop. You know, Paddy would know, old Leon Gouchet and all them, I would go and see regularly in France for now, like, you know. Well, with that, we stopped in Allegarden sometime, and then we came on the first convoy out of Hamburg. And while we were marching through Hamburg to get onto the boat, there was an old Jerry policeman there, and he was he had these women clearing the roads, and he just stood there. So I said to Rosendon, why don't he do some bloody work? He said, well, he's asked what he got the women for. I said, well, tell him if I want to see him do something. I was getting a little bit bolshy at the time, and he said, he told Jerry to get working with the women. He said, I'm just there to watch him. So he said, well, I've got news for you. If you don't get bloody work, we're going to bloody shoot you. And with that, he quickly got his hands tied, didn't he? Got on with the work. And next thing you know, we were home. And the next thing you know, we were back into billets again, back in old billets again. And then we heard that we were going to Far East, to Burma.
We
were going to go there with 1 and 5 commando when the bomb stopped it all. And they dropped the bomb, and we didn't go. You want a cup of tea?